Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. On Monday, Governor John Kasich focused much of his State of the State address on education, highlighting mentoring programs aimed at getting kids through high school. He called for spending more money on such programs and for new mentoring initiatives.
And we're going to launch a new initiative, Community Connectors. It's an initiative to support the best ideas in our state for bringing together schools, parents, communities, community organizations, faith-based groups, business leaders, and of course our students in mentoring efforts based on proven practices.
Joining us now from Cleveland is a State Impact Ohio reporter who covered the speech, Michelle Canoe. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Good morning, Ann. Thanks for having me.
The governor talked for a long time about education, right? Give us a sense about how much of his speech he did devote to this topic.
The governor spent about 20 minutes of his overall speech talking about education. Some of the ideas that he referenced are things that are somewhat new. Other ideas are things that have been in place that the legislature has been working on or thinking about for a little while. I would say that we did hear some new things. I wouldn't say that there were any significant surprises, except for some things that he didn't mention, some education initiatives that the state has been working on, such as its third grade reading guarantee. He didn't touch that. Teacher evaluation systems, he didn't touch that. I'd say that was surprising that he didn't reference those things in his speech.
He brought up Community Connectors, a new initiative. How much did he tell us about that?
The idea with his Community Connectors program is that he wants to see all different aspects of the community coming together, working with schools, working with students. The idea is to bring together business leaders, community leaders, faith-based leaders, and to engage them in the school day or perhaps after school, and for them to work in a mentoring capacity with students. He told us this is to bring about the better angel in all of us, a way for people who have an interest to get involved but don't necessarily know how to do so. The idea is to have some structured opportunity for that and likely mentoring, ways that these business leaders, community leaders, could impart some of the knowledge that they have from their own experiences to students and help keep students in school, help keep students engaged, help them learn about career opportunities that are available. And he told us that he's interested in using some of the funding from the casino licensing to pay for it. He said about $10 million from some of those casino revenues would go toward this and would provide a 3-to-1 match program. So anyone who donated $1 would be matched at a rate of $3 from these casino fees.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Michelle Canoe for State Impact Ohio out of Cleveland at WCPN. We're talking this hour about mentoring and how it may fit into what the governor proposed in his State of the State address this week. If you have a question or comment about mentoring, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You said he proposed a $10 million expenditure on this. Did he give any sense about what went into the decision to pick the $10 million number? Did they do any research that this is what it might cost or what it would be paying for?
That is a really good question, and he didn't elaborate on that specifically during his speech. Now, with the casino revenues, there is a stipulation that some of the money that's set aside for these casinos has to go towards some job training programs. Now, again, with the Community Connectors initiative, he didn't specify exactly whether or not this mentoring program would be aimed at job training per se. He did reference that those involved could impart some knowledge about jobs to students. So maybe that's how he can use the casino revenue to cover this aspect of the mentoring program. But that's about all that we know at this point.
Do we know where he's getting his cues from in terms of the model for a program like this?
Yeah, the governor referenced a couple of programs that seem to be demonstrating strong results. He referenced the Cincinnati Youth Collaborative that's been in place since 1982 and has done a really good job of working with the Cincinnati public schools. in the business community there and matching up students there with mentors. And he also referenced the program out of Toledo, a partnership with the United Way, which changes schools into community centers. The idea is that the community can use the school after the school day opens up, after school programs, tutoring programs, also has programs available for parents to come in and get financial literacy, get other kinds of tax information, that sort of thing. Those are some of the things that he referenced as ideas to kind of model his Community Connectors initiative off of.
Is there any sense about what kind of acceptance or resistance there might be to this idea in the legislature, in the educational community?
The idea of mentoring is something that appeals across the aisle. It's not a wedge issue. It's something that educators know tends to work well, that when you connect young people with someone who has more experience, with someone who can give them a perspective outside of their own environment, who can expose them to opportunities, that those students tend to perform better in school. They tend to have better outcomes in terms of fewer behavior issues, in terms of graduating from high school more often, in terms of pursuing post-secondary opportunities. So this kind of proposal is something that is pretty wide appealing. It's something that Democrats, Republicans, Independents, you know, can all kind of rally around. So it's not a big wedge issue. As far as how to pay for it and how to scale up a program like the Cincinnati Youth Collaborative, for example, or scale it up statewide, the ways of actually doing that may be more challenging and then could present wedge issues down the line.
We'll be talking with someone from the Cincinnati Youth Collaborative later on in the show. Has Ohio tried anything like this before statewide? Do we know?
As far as we know, there isn't anything in place that's been tried statewide, no. There are instances within school districts that have tried large-scale mentoring programs, and again, I'd point to the Cincinnati Youth Collaborative specifically, mm-hmm. but not that we're really aware of on a statewide scale.
But mentorship programs in general are pretty common in Ohio schools already, aren't they?
They are pretty common, and there are a lot of outside organizations that do mentoring that school districts tend to work with or may partner with on a small scale. And for example, some of those might be Big Brothers, Big Sisters. You'll see those in Lorain County. You'll see it in Cuyahoga County, for example. There's a program called Minds Matter, which is based in Cleveland. They work directly with the Cleveland schools. But to see something on a large scale that's statewide, you haven't seen that sort of thing.
He also mentioned vocational training for kids as early as seventh grade. And actually, I heard talking to kids about making decisions about what they want to be when they grow up, when they're very young. Of course, we already do that, and they tell us they want to be firefighters and, president and things like that. But what was he talking about with all of that?
Yeah, the governor has been making this push to tie education better to jobs available in the future ever since his term began. So I think this is part of his overall push toward improving the jobs outlook in the state and preparing people for the jobs that are going to be available. In terms of targeting this toward young people, vocational education in Ohio has a long history. It's really firmly built in at the high school level, although there are some programs at the middle school level. And I think the governor here is saying, look, we know that there are a lot of students who like working with their hands. We know that there are going to be a lot of these jobs in manufacturing available, in technology available. We need to do a better job of creating a pipeline of students to get them there. And this is one way to do that. And it's kind of an interesting shift because over the past 40 years, we've really seen the pendulum shift in education from targeting students toward a vocational track to targeting them toward seeking out higher education, as in a four-year college degree. And now you sort of see it shifting back toward the vocational track as we realize this this need to have people better prepared for the jobs that are going to be available in the future.
There's also been a recent push for career guidance. There's a bill that's pending in the legislature, for example, to require high schools to distribute career decision guides.
Yep, that bill is House Bill number 393. It hasn't gotten a whole lot of traction just yet, but again, the idea is to make sure that students know what kinds of jobs are out there. This would require that school districts work with the local workforce investment board and that they draft up some of the most in-demand jobs that are in that local community, as well as in-demand jobs in the state. And the idea is that it would include information about what kinds of skills you need to get those jobs, what kind of work pathway you might need to get into those jobs, what kinds of classes to take to get those jobs as well. So it's part of a push kind of within the state legislature, too, to make sure that students are better prepared for the kinds of jobs that are available, that they know what kind of training they need.
And so when it comes to the mentorship component of the Community Connectors program, it's that idea. It's the idea of giving kids ideas about what's out there, giving them a sense about what the possibilities are.
That's right. And it's also about giving people who work in the business community, those who are CEOs or those who are executives at their various companies, a concrete way for them to get involved and get active within the schools and to act as role models for students.
Is there any idea about when it comes to the Community Connectors program that it's going to be targeted at lower income students, lower income districts?
We don't have a clear idea of that right now. That's a very good question. We're not exactly sure whether that's solely going to be the focus or whether it may really be aimed at all types of students.
Okay, well, Michelle Canoe, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Michelle Canoe is a reporter for State Impact Ohio. State Impact Ohio is a reporting collaboration of three public radio stations in Ohio with focus on education issues, WCPN in Cleveland, which is where Michelle is from, WKSU in Kent, and WOSU, of course, in Central Ohio. Coming up, we will continue our conversation about the idea of mentoring and the issue of mentoring for low-income students. For low-income students, Ohio's high school dropout rate hovers around 35%. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. For low-income students, Ohio's high school dropout rate hovers around 35%. It's a problem that Ohio Governor John Kasich highlighted in his fourth State of the State address on Monday. Among other things, he proposed a mentorship program with the goal of pairing high school students with members of the community who could serve as role models. Behind every successful person, the governor said, is someone cheering her on.
As you made it through your life, might have been your mom, it might have been your father, it might have been your grandfather, it might have been your coach, but there was somebody that taught you how to be successful, somebody that taught you how to dream, someone that taught you that nothing could stop you.
Joining us now to talk about the effectiveness of mentorship is Tim Cavell. He's a psychology professor and mentorship expert at the University of Arkansas, and he's a mentor himself. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Thank you.
You study mentorship. First, tell us what defines the term.
Well, it can be defined in a number of ways, but typically it's described as a volunteer or paraprofessional with either greater age or greater experience providing guidance and support to another person. That's the most generic definition out there.
Does it always have to be an organized relationship?
Not at all. A distinction that's made in the field is a distinction between natural mentors, those that sort of emerge organically from one's experiences, and then there's formal or assigned mentoring, which you recognize with Big Brothers Big Sisters, where there's a match made with someone who the young person didn't know already. There is sort of a hybrid model, too, that's actually being used by the National Guard in their Youth Challenge program, which is a high school dropout prevention program. And it's called Youth Initiated Mentoring. And Youth Initiated Mentoring is exactly what it sounds like. It's the youth is charged with trying to find someone in their home community to be their mentor for at least a period of 12 months. And this happens after these youth are actually put through 6 months of a boot camp experience. So it's an interesting combination of learning to kind of defer to authority, recognize authority, and then going back into your community and trying to find a local mentor to guide you.
I would imagine that natural mentor relationships or something like that, that youth-initiated mentorship is probably the most successful.
Well, the youth-initiated mentoring model is two things. It's isolated. It's been fairly isolated within the National Guard Youth Challenge Program.
Okay.
It's not common. And there's not been an extensive amount of research on it. So, you know, it's hard to say. Some people, and the natural mentoring process is hard to get a handle on, too, because it's hard to do experiments with natural mentors. You know, usually there are studies where you see who has a mentor and how are you doing. I was reading a study just this morning that showed that the youth who were most likely to have non-parental adults in their lives providing support and guidance were the youth who also had some of the best parents. And so we have to be careful about assuming that the youth at risk are going to naturally find a mentor. Oftentimes they're isolated and disconnected.
How do you measure in your studies whether mentorship is working? What are the key factors?
That's a great question. And to answer that question, I have to give you a bit of history. Youth mentoring, particularly in the form of Big Brothers, Big Sisters, has been around for a long time, over 100 years. And it began essentially as a social service, a charitable service, providing kids who maybe lacked a father, this is typically how it started, with a role model. And more recently, there's been an attempt to cast mentoring as a prevention strategy, as something more targeted or akin to an intervention. The problem has been that there's the research to guide that kind of work is relatively new. It's a pretty immature research field. And so when you look at sometimes we use we make a distinction between focused or problem-specific mentoring versus generic mentoring. And these aren't formal terms. This is just convenient vocabulary that we can use. Mm-hmm. Generic mentoring is when you have a child placed paired with a mentor, and there may not be a specific outcome you're looking to achieve. Instead, you're looking to for a variety, a range of things, good things to happen. And when we do that kind of research, and that's the traditional Big Brother, Big Sister model, what you generally find is that there are gains, small gains across a number of areas, as opposed to big gains in only one or two areas. And you can contrast that approach to mentoring with something that targets maybe a very specific population. You know, let's say, you know, kids with diabetes or children who are having trouble learning to read, or in the case of my research, children who are being bullied at school. When you do that kind of work, then it narrows your research, your measurement focus to the things that you're most likely looking to move the needle on.
But that's not to say that it's not moving the needle on other things.
It certainly can, but, yes, it can or not. And that's what the research side of things we're trying to figure out is, when is it effective for whom, under what conditions?
Natural mentors... let's talk about that a little bit more, because that seems to be what's lacking so much, or we wouldn't have created all these programs of formal or assigned mentorships.
Mm-hmm. And that speaks to the point I made earlier that when researchers study child development, and the processes over time and outcomes that emerge. An expression that sometimes is used is that good things go together, bad things go together. And that's, and the case in point is that when children have a lot of good interpersonal skills and good parenting, well, guess what? They're going to have more non-parental adults in their life. It seems rather unfair that they have all these good things. And you look to the youth who are struggling, who are maybe less fortunate in terms of their family situation, the quality of the parenting, their skill sets. These are youth that tend to have far fewer non-parental adult connections. So natural mentoring is not going to necessarily happen. The access, the opportunities are not there as often.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about mentoring this hour. My guest is right now a psychology professor from the University of Arkansas, Tim Cavell. If you have a question or comment for Professor Cavell, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'd particularly like to hear from folks that have been mentored themselves and what they think was either a successful part of that or maybe what didn't work. 614-292-8513. Tim, a lot of people think that being a mentor means you have to have a deep relationship with your mentee. But you found, surprisingly, that this isn't the case. So I guess first we have to define what we mean by a deep relationship. Maybe it's really close and loving or something like that. But what are we talking about here?
Right. That's a great question. Again, the traditional model of mentoring is a one-on-one relationship where the activities, the time spent is outside of school, engaging in any number of activities. And that traditional model made the assumption that the strength of the relationship and the length of the relationship are important factors in determining outcome. I mentor a young boy. I've been mentoring him for 2 years. He's now a sixth grader. And the experience there is trying to hang in there with him so that I can be available when he needs me to or when he needs support. And that's a long-haul sort of model of mentoring. But the mentoring that I do as a researcher is more short-term and problem-focused. Again, it's with children who are bullied. We have college student mentors who go into the schools and actually sit with children at the lunch table twice a week. They're lunch buddy mentors. And the goal there is to try to help these children who are often hard to like, or maybe there's a reputation among other kids that they're not likable, and they're easy targets for being bullied. And having a mentor there on a recurring basis, so far the data are promising in terms of being a way to help these youth. But what's interesting about mentoring in a lunchroom is that there's not opportunity to build these strong relationships. Not only that, but when we mentor a child for more than one semester, we use a different mentor every semester. So we're not even pursuing a long, deep relationship. Instead, we're trying to use mentoring in other ways as a way to enhance that child's social reputation in the lunchroom, enhance that child's positive interactions in the lunchroom, with the supposition that that'll carry over into other aspects of school life.
It sounds like when you talk about the focused mentoring, the lunchroom mentoring model, it's more like a protector or some kind of filter for things. Are you trying to introduce the child to other children in a way? Are you trying to have conversations with him or her that expose them to other children in different ways? Is that what that's about?
Yes.
Okay.
Great question. If I can kind of expound upon that. And here's the interesting story about the research that I do. We created Lunch Buddy Mentoring because we needed a control condition in a federally funded research study. We had an experimental condition that we liked. It had a bunch of moving parts and it was pretty involved. But we needed a control condition and we couldn't use a no treatment control condition. So we invented what we thought was going to be a faux mentoring condition. It's called Lunch Buddy Mentoring. We said, let's create a mentoring program where we really water down the relationship. And so we put the mentor in the lunchroom And the mentors would complain and say, I can't really build a relationship because everyone's talking to me. All the kids there at the table are part of this conversation. And the other thing we did was we used a different mentor each semester. And so we had the supposition that if we can water down that relationship, then it'll function as a nice, nearly no treatment control condition. The findings, however, went exactly the opposite direction. And those kids with those lunch buddy mentors at 1 and 2 year follow-up did better, particularly on teachers' ratings of scholastic ability and problem behavior. And so we are left scratching our heads, wondering, well, what is it that we did? Because it clearly wasn't that there was a strong relationship there. The children didn't rate it as a strong relationship, and yet the outcomes were better. So I think we're at a point now in the mentoring field where we're starting to reconceptualize exactly what it is. Is mentoring ideally done in a way where you isolate the youth and the mentor away from everything and everyone and try to build this strong, deep relationship? Or does it make more sense to use the mentor to help that child build connections in their own ecology? Because there are resources in those settings, but oftentimes the children who are having trouble can't access those contexts, those resources, or they find it difficult to participate and be successful in those contexts. Imagine, for example, a boy who's a little hard to like, hard to manage. He may not have the resources in his family to join a sports team. Mm-hmm. And if he were to join a sports team, he may not be able to cooperate enough for the coach to tolerate him and keep him on the ball team. And so a mentor who's involved there could actually help this child be part of that team and maybe get the benefits of all that happens in that natural environment. So we're starting to rethink mentoring, and we see it as an opportunity to engage in the network, to build sort of a bridge of social capital between the mentor and the child, and facilitating those connections within the child's natural environment. And that's very new stuff, but that's sort of the leading edge of where some research is in the youth mentoring field.
So you're talking about maybe customizing the mentoring experience to what you talk about the individual's social ecology. So if a kid wants to be in a team but doesn't have that skill set to make it in the team, you're talking about maybe getting a mentor for that, like you did for the lunchroom bully
right.
mentoring thing.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe he just needs someone in the stands cheering for him and telling him when he's goofing off why that affects his experience in the team.
Well, let me say it's so I wrote a blog recently, and the title of which is No Longer a Drive-By Mentor. And it made reference to the fact that we have come to know from some research by colleagues of mine that when a parent asks for a mentor for their child, they have really big hopes and dreams of what that mentor might do. But they're also taking some big risks. You know, there's potential harm that can happen when a stranger is introduced into the life of a child. And yet the typical scenario is for the mentor to come by, pick up the child and whisk them off somewhere. And they're not spending much time in that child's natural environment or with the parent or with the siblings. And I have, as a mentor myself, I am trying to work against that trend. I'm getting to know the people, his siblings, his friends, his mom, his grandmother, his friends' parents. And this is all the things that
I see
parents do with their own kids. They're not isolating their child from everything else. They're in the mix. And why, if mentoring is going to be helpful, I think it should go in a similar direction.
What about peer mentors? We've heard some about, you did mention at the outset that they'll have a greater age, there'll be greater experience. Sometimes they're volunteers, paraprofessionals. But what about a 17-year-old high school student mentoring a 14-year-old junior high or a 13-year-old junior high kid?
Yeah, well, that can happen, Anne, but it's far more common is for a high schooler to mentor a child in the elementary grades.
Okay.
Yeah, and the jury is out on that. Big Brothers Big Sisters did a large national study of its school-based mentoring program. And it was done at a time where there was a lot of money being pumped into school-based mentoring by the federal government. And a lot of these programs had not been established for very long. They weren't being run most efficiently. And in order to grow the number of mentors, there was a lot of recruitment of high school mentors. In fact, when this study was published and done back in 2006 or so, almost half of the mentors, school-based mentors, were high school students. And it turns out that the outcomes for the kids who were mentored were far less positive when paired with a high school mentor than with an adult mentor. Now, one good reason for that is that oftentimes some of these high school mentors would arrive en masse, you know, a big group of them, and they would be spending time with each other, and perhaps more so than connecting with the child.
Right.
I just did looked at a couple of high school mentoring programs in Canada with Big Brothers Big Sisters of Canada, and the results can really vary depending on how it's structured. And so that's the key, is you can't simply put a child with an adult and everything's going to be magical. And you've got to think it through. You've got to plan it. You've got to be wise about what you're trying to do. What is it you would have the mentor do to promote the specific outcomes you're seeking? You can't just simply – it's an easy thing to say for politicians and policymakers that, you know, let's use mentors. The presumption is that it will be volunteers. There won't be a need for huge investments. And that we all know, quote unquote, that mentoring is proven to work. Well, it's more complicated than that.
In your research, did you study gender differences? In other words, the reaction or the response or the effectiveness with girls versus boys?
Another good question. I have not. Some of my colleagues have. And for example, with school-based mentoring, the gender factor looms large. And I can't remember the particulars, but depending on whether it's mentoring of a child in high school or elementary school, the outcome's different depending on whether it's boys or girls. My recollection, and I may not be completely accurate about this, is that mentoring high school girls tends to be not so productive as mentoring high school boys. And the other thing that can happen, or that tends to happen, is that the mentoring relationships between boys and their big brothers tends to last longer than mentoring relationships with girls and their adult bigs. On the other hand, it's a lot harder to find a match for a boy. Sometimes boys will sit on the wait list for quite a while because of the sheer lack of male mentors.
My guest is Tim Cavell. He's a psychology professor at the University of Arkansas. He's also a mentoring expert and a mentor himself. We're talking about mentoring today because the governor this week in his State of the State address highlighted mentoring programs aimed at getting kids through high school. So if you have a question or comment coming up, we're going to hear from someone from a mentoring program in Cincinnati that the governor mentioned in his address. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. We're talking today about the education proposals and the governor's recent State of the State address. In his speech, he laid out a plan for a mentoring program aimed at helping high schoolers graduate. This is not foreign territory for Ohio. The state already has a number of mentorship programs, some of which the governor mentioned by name.
If you think of Cincinnati Youth Collaborative, 96% of those kids graduate, go on to college, the military, or a job.
Well, we did think of the Youth Collaborative in Cincinnati. We're joined now by its president and CEO, Jane Keller. Welcome to the show, Jane.
Thank you, Ann. Glad to be with you.
Still with us from the University of Arkansas at Fayetteville, where he teaches psychology, is mentoring expert Tim Cavell. Tim, once again, thanks for joining us. Jane, the CYC has three main programs, and they're all basically aimed at helping young people get through school and get jobs. What are the main differences between the programs?
And the three programs, we call them a continuum of services. So it's a mentoring program, a college access and success program, and then dropout and career transition. Mentoring, adding another positive adult in a young person's life. The college access and success program is really working with students around their next steps of what they need to do to get to college through that high school. So that talks about, you know, financial preparation, that talks about college applications, going to colleges, those type of thing. And then lastly, the career preparation dropout prevention is the Jobs for Ohio graduate program. We call it Jobs for Cincinnati Graduates here, to get kids ready for those next steps, whether it's career or military or could be college, a very intensive work with them. They're probably our most at-risk students, but to get them ready for those steps and to follow them through for a year thereafter to make sure they're successful in their life after high school.
How many people are you working with at any one time?
Student-wise, anywhere from 2,500 to 3,000 students a
year.
Business-wise, 80-plus businesses, we are partners with five different school districts.
What kinds of backgrounds do your kids come from primarily? Does it run the gamut, or is it mostly low-income? How does that work?
We like to say we target vulnerable kids.
Okay.
So it's young people who have obstacles in their life, whether it might be economically disadvantaged, whether it might be academic issues, discipline issues in school, just a host of issues around the lack of family support. If you look at Cincinnati Public School District, who is our primary partner, and you look at their demographics, about 75% of their students are on free and reduced lunches. And so we'll mirror those type of demographic profiles.
How do you decide who mentors whom? How does that work?
There's an art and science to that. We work very closely with our school partners to identify the students based on priority factors within the schools. We ask the young students to fill out an application, talk about their interests, what they're looking for. And then from the volunteer side, same process, fill out an application, where are your interests? What age are you looking for? What are some preferences potentially? And then from there, we make a match between an adult and a young person.
Tim Cavell, Jane Keller mentioned the student filling out applications, trying to get a sense of where they want to go and what they want to do, which brings me to a question. Maybe we dealt with it, but I'm not sure about the idea of buy-in by the child. How important is that?
It's huge. And again, another good question. The storybook picture of mentoring is that of an adult coming in to kind of rescue a child who's just simply there waiting, lost, you know,
right,
without any connections at all. What is more likely to be the truth is that the connections that exist may not be adaptive or growth promoting, but it's not as if they're waiting around for something or someone to show up. They're investing time and energy into things. It may not always be the sort of things that will help them down the road. It may be hanging out with kids who are smoking or drinking or doing drugs or any other of a number of things. So we, as mentors, we compete for time and attention of the youth we serve. There was a study just completed by Carla Herrera and David Dubois and colleagues, and one of the things learned from the mentors was that they often felt not needed, that they were sort of dismissed by the youth. And I think that's a good example of the fact that these youth are engaged in something, and if we want to have influence, we have to first matter to them. We have to compete against the other things that are already in their life that may be attracting their time and attention.
Jane Keller at Cincinnati Youth Collaborative, does that make sense to you?
It surely does. It surely does. There are a lot of competing factors in a young person's life. So that, another adult coming in and really spending time building that relationship from day one is so very important. The other thing that's very important to that circle is the family. And so part of best practices is to include the family in the mentoring relationship. That can be challenging at times. But what we find is if there is another connecting point within that family, you have another team member with you supporting your work with that young person.
Now, Tim Cavell, that underscores what you were saying earlier. Is the idea that it's more on the mentor's team, or is it more on the team as a whole, having the family involved?
I think it's building connections for youth that are adaptive and positive any way you can. And sometimes parents are don't have the resources or the time to be able to build more connections. I think about the mother of the boy that I mentor. She's working hard. She's doing it herself. She's got five kids. And so there's not a lot of time and energy left over for her to make some of these connections. I introduced myself to her son's basketball coach recently, and he commented that I've not met her. And that doesn't speak to her lack of desire to be part of his life. It speaks to the demands that she's facing. She works night shift. And so it's a way to build. Think about our own children. We sort of take for granted the interconnectedness of the lives that we've weaved for them. All the people that, the village that is raising them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's for the youth who are at risk, there's not so much of a coherent, positive village. And so building connections is important between parents and mentors, between parents and teachers, mentors and teachers, other coaches, neighbors. I'm not even sure if we can predict which are the necessary connections. I think it's just more important to weave those connections and then see what arises.
Jane Keller, it sounds like when you talk about a continuum of service, you're talking about that village.
That's correct. It really is that support system that you can provide to young people and their families. And often it's helping them navigate through that and those connections that Tim talked about. Often parents, to Tim's point, don't have the time or they're not comfortable with the school environment for various reasons. And so that mentor can come in, and that's a strong component of our relationship with Cincinnati Public Schools, a 30-year relationship of working with the schools, whether that's principal or staff, teachers, their social workers, of making sure we understand the particulars of the young person and the families, and then can help them make connections and navigate. To Tim's point, I know in my own personal experience of my mentee, who's now 21 after 14 years, she lived with her grandmother, and her grandmother had not graduated from high school, and so she didn't understand the points of navigation. So working with her grandmother, really understanding school and how we navigate Raquel through that was so important to her, and actually helped with other siblings she was involved with within her household.
I like how you use the word rappel. I mean, you got to go there. You have to head in a direction. It's just how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, does everybody have the potential to be a mentor? All things being equal, eliminating all the obvious people we don't want to be mentors. Does everyone have that potential? Or do you tend to see the same sorts of people showing up to volunteer for this kind of a role?
I believe that most people have the potential, but that's something as we talk to our volunteers of really making sure that that's a role that they're comfortable with taking at this point in time. Do they have the time? Are they comfortable with some of the challenges that they're going to face? Because there are challenges as being a mentor, as in any relationship, and how do you navigate through that? But what we find, the attributes of caring, want to give back, have a passion around young people, and who themselves have had mentors in their lives, maybe indirectly or directly. And so they want to provide a support system for a young person.
Tim Cavell, anything to add there?
Yeah. I just love your questions, Anne.
Thank you.
So I've given talks before where I characterize mentoring as of two types. Sometimes it's like a blind date where you're pairing together two people who don't know each other, and you just hope that there's enough of a relationship there for it to maintain and flourish and serve the youth. But if a mentor doesn't have that sense of caring, that compassion, that commitment, then it can be kind of a mess. Versus the mentoring that we do in schools in lunchtime, we use college student mentors, and there is some self-selection. You know, if you don't want to do it, you don't sign up. But because it's a fairly structured program, you go twice a week and eat lunch with a child and hang out and try to be fun and non-aversive. We can tolerate a wide range of mentors. You can be fairly clunky and still be a pretty good lunch buddy mentor. And the fact that it's only for a semester means that the time commitment isn't so long. So yes, I think a lot of people can be mentors. You just may have to fit the mentoring program to your circumstances.
Stacy in Canton, you're on the air. We have Jane Keller of the Cincinnati Youth Collaborative and also Tim Cavell. He's a psychology professor at the University of Arkansas. Stacy, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a couple questions. I happened to catch just the last few minutes of this here. And I happen to have a 17-year-old daughter that I have struggled with since she was about 12, 13, getting her to go to school regularly. I've been able to keep her in school. We did do a out-of-the-house program with Worcester Children's Home where she went and did stay there. She attended that school, did great, brought her back home, back to the same patterns. At this point, she doesn't go at all, maybe once a month.
Yeah.
The school, because she has straight A's still, they did a program for her. She goes in, she can get on the computer, do her classes that way. I don't know if you guys have dealt with that before, mm-hmm. but it's through her actual high school, and she has to go in and do it there. She won't even go do that most of the time. But if she goes in for once a month, she can catch everything up. The school's not doing anything. I've taken her to court myself several times. I now kind of have given up. And I'm not sure, I don't know if this is a program that maybe would possibly work for her. Maybe somebody else could connect with her better than I can.
Well, let's hear, Stacy. Thanks for your call, because Tim Cavell, Jane Keller, Tim, let's start with you. This has got to be a sound pretty familiar.
Yes, I guess. It does sound like a very challenging situation. I sympathize with Stacy. Unfortunately, most of the formal mentoring programs that exist don't meet someone of 17 years of age.
Hmm.
I've had conversation with some of my colleagues about creating a system whereby parents can go about finding their own mentor. So I don't know if she may want to use resources in her community that do formal mentoring to get some guidance about how she might go about doing that.
Jane Keller, we just have about a minute.
Sure. I don't know if I have an exact answer for that. It sounds like very challenging. To Tim's point, sometimes of talking to the young person, if they can identify, they know people that they admire who almost, if you tap them on the shoulder, can be an informal mentor. Often at 17, why not impossible, it's a little bit harder to get that match going in a formal mentoring program. But I would seek out of listening to the young person and asking them of who is positive in their life, and maybe that's an opportunity to tap them on the shoulder and ask if they can work with them.
All right, Stacy, good luck with that. Thanks so much for your call. Jane Keller, President and CEO of the Cincinnati Youth Collaborative, thanks to you for joining us today.
You're more than welcome. I do want to do a shout-out, Anne, if you don't mind, to the wonderful partners that we have in the Cincinnati community. Business is very important, and they bring their human resources to the table. So I want to do shout-out to all the businesses, such okay. as the UC Med students and the Luxoticas and all of them that come and bring the wealth of their employees in the mentoring program.
All righty. Thanks, Jane. And Tim Cavell from the University of Arkansas. Tim, thanks so much for helping us out today.
You bet. It was fun.
Tim Cavell is a psychology professor, a mentor expert, and a mentor himself from the University of Arkansas. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks to the All Sides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurovich, assistant producer Rachel Quimby, and all the rest.